Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Kahn.
They just don't teach us in graduate school or in many coaching programs even, you know, really how to actually get clients.
Today on episode 429 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with Dr. Chloe Carmichael, the founder of DrChloe.com and ProfitablePractices.net. I'm going to ask Dr. Chloe how she grew her revenue so quickly in a new practice, how she built a team to scale her practice, how she started to train other therapists to build a successful practice, and much more. You can read a description of our discussion, information about Dr. Chloe, including links and resources we mentioned in this episode, on our website at smashingtheplateau.com. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Now let's welcome Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Dr. Chloe is a clinical psychologist in New York City whose practice has done something very unusual for most psychologists, which is that her practice has documented revenue of over $1 million annually. She works with New York's best and brightest, as well as with clients all over the world via video. She is now also offering a program that helps other therapists and coaches to build their dream practice. Dr. Chloe appears regularly in national TV and print on topics related to personal and professional goal attainment, as well as stress management and relationships. Chloe, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
David, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Chloe, is revenue of over $1 million unusual for a relatively new practice?
Yes, I think it is pretty unusual, even for established practices. Honestly, it was never even really a goal or a target of mine. When I first started my office, I was just, you know, concerned with seeing if I could keep my own individual therapy chair full. To my surprise and delight, however, the practice grew much bigger.
Yeah. Now, in the introductory video that you have on ProfitablePractices.net, you describe how you started your practice right out of school and it grew quickly. Did you achieve your rapid revenue growth intentionally or was it by accident?
Well, I guess probably somewhere in the middle. You know, it was certainly intentional for me that I knew I needed to get some revenue growth immediately, but I was just thinking more in terms of enough revenue to make sure that I could cover my office rent and my living expenses and that kind of stuff. So it was definitely intentional that I was keeping focused on revenue and getting clients. But it was never a thing where I said to myself, I'm going to grow a $1 million practice and hire therapists. That part actually just started happening because my own schedule got so full that I had no choice but to either hire people or continue referring out. And I didn't even mind referring out, but I was spending so much time even talking to clients that were trying to get an appointment with me, and then I was spending a lot of time referring them out. It was almost like a full-time job of running a referral service, and I realized eventually that it would actually be better if I would just hire people because the clients wanted to be able to be in my office with my approach anyway.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is there were sort of two steps. First step was you essentially filled all your billable time. And the second step was you scaled your own model or methodology by hiring other therapists.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what I actually did first is I actually oversold my billable time. So my motto when I first started was, I don't say no to work. And because I was afraid of not having enough to cover my bills and to stay in business, I was actually working 6 days a week for a while. You know, I see my first client at 7 a.m. because I'm a morning person. And then as I was filling up and filling up, you know, it got to the point where I was working, you know, too many hours. So I sold and even probably oversold my billable time until I really realized it wasn't sustainable and that I needed to do something different.
Yeah. So let's actually break this down. So in the first part where you were overselling your billable hours, which actually is something that many professionals selling their expertise would love to be able to do. What was the secret to being so popular and being able to oversell your billable hours?
Well, that's a good question, David. And, you know, I've asked myself that question over time as well. You know, as I've been developing profitablepractices.net for other therapists, I've wanted to see if I could put a really fine point on that question. I think that part of it is my approach to therapy, which is rather unique. Therapy and coaching, I do both. A lot of times therapy and coaching actually look very similar when you're working with high functioning people like I do. So my approach to therapy and coaching, I think, is unique, and word was getting around. I'm very proud to say that a lot of the business that I have is referrals from existing clients, and then those referrals refer more people. And a lot of my business grew just through referrals. But also, I should say that when I was getting my licensing hours before I had my practice, I was working, getting my licensing hours at an employee assistance program that specialized in doing employee assistance program for Fortune 500 companies. So my role at the EAP, the employee assistance program, was to do short-term counseling with executives and then, you know, try to get them placed into ongoing therapy with a local therapist. And part of my job was not only to do the short-term counseling with them, but also to shop around and kind of play concierge to look around and find the right therapist for them and then get them their appointment with that therapist and really do a nice handoff. And I was shocked at how difficult it was for me logistically to find a therapist that was presentable. You know, a lot of therapists, you know, they do great work, but they have maybe kind of a strange way of presenting themselves online. Or as soon as they get a little bit busy, when a therapist gets about 50 to 60% booked, a lot of times they end up too busy to return calls and emails for referrals. And so then they have a hard time really ever getting totally booked up. So anyway, through my work at the EAP of trying to pair clients with therapists, I became really aware of a lot of the roadblocks that people have when they're trying to book a therapist. And so I set my office up to be really user-friendly and really easy for people to come and actually get their appointments. And I have a very kind of customer service type of approach that I think is really lacking with a lot of therapists out there.
Right. So even before you had your license, you were starting to focus on the business aspect and figuring out how you could do something that fit your own values and also did a better job than most of what you were seeing in the marketplace.
Yeah, definitely. I knew I wanted to be in private practice even before I went to graduate school. I went to graduate school knowing that I wanted to become a clinical psychologist and have a private practice. So even during graduate school, I had a little file where I would just keep ideas and things like that so I would be ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, very smart. Now, who's your ideal client? Whom do you serve now?
Well, I have a couple of different types, but they're all within this realm of what we call high-functioning people, which, David, I'm sure that's what you are, and I'm sure that's what most of the people listening to this show are. So in psychology parlance, a high-functioning person is, you know, a person that has a job, an education, they're able to take good care of themselves, and they're able to have, for the most part, good, healthy relationships with other people. So what a lot of, you know, of us in New Yorkers just consider, you know, normal life is actually considered, you know, being a high functioning person. So within that space of high functioning people, I tend to work with a lot of either young professionals or executives that are having some workplace issues. Like maybe they, for the first time, they've gotten a big promotion, which is great, but then for the first time, they're not the smartest person in the room anymore. So stress management is really big for high-functioning people because they tend to keep on taking more and more responsibility and getting promoted, which is great, but then they reach a point where they become a little bit saturated, you know, with goals and responsibilities. And so they need someone to help them with stress management or navigating some of the softer skills of, you know, learning to manage perfectionism or relationships. So relationships is kind of the second area where I work with high functioning people. A lot of times we'll have people that are doing really well in their work life, but they can't seem to figure out how to get their dating life in order. They want to get married, but they have a lot of kind of personal quirks, you know, that are getting in the way a little bit there. So I work a lot with professional goals and personal goals.
Yeah, it sounds like many people I know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just like every New Yorker.
Pretty much. Now, when you were training before you had your license, were you specifically thinking about working with high functioning people once you opened your practice?
Yes, I was. I was always thinking about that. So when you're in your first and second year, you know, of training, you don't usually have the opportunity to work with high functioning people because, you know, what high functioning person would generally just go say, oh, give me a first year trainee, you know, because high functioning people do tend to have resources. They tend to want to work with someone who's a little bit more experienced. So I did not have the opportunity to necessarily work with high functioning people early on, but that is what I knew I wanted to do. And every opportunity that I had for training, because, to get a PhD in clinical psychology is 5 years of training plus an additional year of earning your licensing hours. So starting around, maybe my third year of training or so, I was able to start getting some positions working with high functioning people.
Yeah. And clearly you must have been doing something well because these are people for whom it takes time to build trust and build the relationships. And the trust can erode in a nanosecond if you're doing something wrong. So congratulations on being able to build a practice with this target audience very quickly.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it really has been exciting. And I think the work that I did at that EAP, the Employee Assistance Program for the Fortune 500 companies, was actually really helpful because it gave me a window into the mind of these high-functioning people because I would present them with, say, three different therapists and say, okay, I did my homework. I've got three different therapists to offer you. Let's choose one. And then they would talk to me about their process of evaluating these therapists or what their roadblocks were. And it was extremely informative to me.
I'll bet. So now let's shift and talk about the next bit of growth that you dealt with. Once your practice was full or, in fact, overbooked, what decisions did you need to make and what led you to decide that you wanted to hire people and how did you end up starting that growth track?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I, you know, was super excited that I had all these clients. And as I said, I was actually referring out a lot of clients as well, just that were inquiring to my practice that I just didn't have room for. But even just knowing that I was referring out a lot was taking a lot of time just because part of the process is that when a new client reaches out to me, I'll do a free 15-minute phone call with them once they've kind of checked off certain screening boxes to indicate that they're, you know, potentially a good fit for me. Then I'll have a free 15-minute phone call with them. So I was having a free 15-minute phone call with people, you know, even though I was full because I had this, you know, motto of not saying no to work. So I was going through all of that. And then I was making, you know, the referral, referring them out because also it might be like, well, gee, I have 2 o'clock on Thursday or 4 o'clock on Friday. And if those times don't work for the potential client, then I would have to refer them out. So then I was spending so much time, you know, learning about the clients and then finding a therapist for them and telling the new therapist all about the client and how I wanted the treatment to unfold because I wanted the referral to be successful, that it was just taking up so much time. And plus, I had too many clients that I was actually already seeing, and I knew I couldn't even continue seeing all the clients that I did have. So I didn't want to just refer out all these clients that were I was actually even already seeing because I had put, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into, you know, creating this practice and cultivating these clients. And plus, I felt like the work I was doing with them was successful. And I didn't want to turn them over to another therapist or coach because I feel like a lot of therapists and coaches just don't have the same kind of hands-on, directive, interactive approach I have. And I knew it wouldn't even be successful if I tried to get them to go see someone else. So I decided instead to hire a therapist just to train them a little bit in my own way of doing things. And so I started interviewing therapists, and I actually found two that I liked, and I was trying to figure out which one to hire, when it was pointed out to me that there was no reason I shouldn't just hire both of the therapists, because I was paying on what we call a fee-for-service model, where the therapist gets paid just for the session. So that was helpful to me to realize I didn't even need to choose one. I could actually hire both and then just get rid of whichever one didn't work out. I would say the biggest learning curve for me, you know, in this practice has been learning about being an employer, you know, more than anything.
Right. That's a totally different skill set.
Yeah.
And now how much of your time do you spend being an employer versus doing therapy with clients?
Well, that's a good question. I try to spend as little time on being an employer as I can, because now at this point, I also, you know, have employees that manage employees. So, you know, thankfully, I've freed myself from as much of that as I can. That's been a whole journey in itself, as far as learning how to separate myself from that part of the work as much as I can. And I've also put a lot of time now into developing my profitable practices program. So I actually see clients now on Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. And then on Tuesdays between 10 a.m. and noon, I'll do those free 15-minute phone calls. Whereas it used to be that if somebody wanted a free 15-minute phone call, I would do it the same day, I would do it the next day, whatever. I just wanted to get that client. But as the business has evolved and the demand has increased, I've had to structure and put some limits around my time a little bit more.
Right. And now it sounds like you've developed a third component to your business and its growth, which is training other therapists and those that have practices with the techniques that have worked for you to grow your practice.
Exactly. And that's what's been really exciting, because, and that kind of came out of a place where, as I was growing my own practice, I reached a point where at one point I was employing like 6 or 7 different therapists. And it was a little overwhelming because I couldn't even really keep track of all of the cases, of all of the clients that all of these therapists were seeing. And that's fine. It's not necessarily my role to do that if I'm going to have a practice of that size. But I actually wanted to do it. I actually wanted to be a little bit more involved in my actual practice rather than just having a whole lot of volume. So what I decided to do is that it would be easier for everybody if I kept my own practice a little bit smaller and did not grow any bigger than around $1 million a year in revenue. And then instead of taking on more clients and hiring more therapists, I would just simply create a program where I could teach therapists how to do this themselves.
Right. And does this mean that if you get more requests for clients than you can handle, that you now have a place where you can refer out to people that you've trained?
Well, yes. You know, certainly I would refer to whichever therapist, you know, seemed like the right fit, whether or not, you know, they had taken my training. But certainly it has been a great way for me to also meet other therapists, as well as to meet other therapists all over the world. So with profitable practices, people all over the world, as well as all over the United States, are using it. And so it's been great as well to just meet and connect with therapists that are even way outside of New York City, because occasionally I even do need to refer outside of New York City.
Is the way that therapists run their practice different in countries outside the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat different. You know, I mean, I guess that their pay structure, you know, and things like that sometimes are a little different. The users that I have right now are, as far as outside of the United States, are in Italy and Greece and England. And I think that those three places, it's actually somewhat similar enough, you know, to the culture and to the way that we're doing things here, that so far there hasn't been any huge issues. Although I've been helping those therapists to think about their own marketing and how they can grow their practice. So some of them, for example, have been interested in how to connect with expats, you know, that are in their area, because a lot of them obviously are, you know, they speak English very well. They're very familiar with U.S. culture. They're using my program. And so especially in places like Italy or Greece, you know, they're interested in trying to pick up some expat clients, which I think is a really smart thing. So some of their, you know, marketing needs are a little bit different, but a lot of the same principles carry all through the globe, you know, so just the way that we present ourselves and think about our clients and think about our practice.
Mm-hmm. And are the principles that you teach in your program ones that only apply to therapists? Because you've also mentioned coaches. Do they apply to other kinds of professionals besides clinically trained therapists?
Yeah, definitely. I have coaches as well that are using the program, and they're using it very happily. And it's been pointed out to me that the program could probably even be used, you know, by people in other, you know, similar types of professions, you know, like an acupuncturist or, you know, other types of consultants. I think a lot of the, you know, things that I talk about in the videos are pretty adaptable, but I think certainly for therapists and for coaches, it's really relevant. The program is really directed at therapists and coaches.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does it make any difference kind of where they are in their career?
No, actually, I have users that are actually still in graduate school, and I have users that are owners of group practices that are already employing other therapists. And I have reviews from all of them that I posted on my website, of course, that I'm very proud of. That's one of the things in my you know, program that we talk about, is not being afraid to toot your own horn and, you know, wanting to get the word out and letting people know, you know, that what you're doing is working. So I have posted reviews on my website from therapists that are super early career, as well as therapists that are heading larger practices.
Yeah. I also noticed on your website, in one of your videos, you talk about how in your training, therapists are not commonly taught how to run a practice. They're taught about therapy, but not the actual business part of what it takes to be in private practice, which is not unusual for any professional selling knowledge, expertise, or creativity.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think you're right. It probably is true for most people that are, you know, whether you're a dentist or, you know, whatever else, or certainly artists, I guess that they don't really tend to teach us that. For therapists and coaches, though, especially for therapists, I think it's almost like the reverse. It's almost like they try to make you feel like it's a bad thing if you want to try to, you know, have a lucrative practice and work with high-functioning people. Sometimes there's so much emphasis on the idea of helping what we call underserved populations, which I think is great, but it's almost like I've actually taken some flack from some of my colleagues for the fact that I limit my work to high-functioning people. And, you know, my response is that, you know, the more money I make, the more able I am to help people all over the place. I can give more money to charity or whatever I want to do. But yeah, you're absolutely right that they just don't teach us in graduate school or in many coaching programs even, you know, really how to actually get clients.
Right, which is really critical. Now, Chloe, whom do you know personally who you think has done a really remarkable job at smashing the plateau?
Well, I have a good friend, and I'm always inspired by him. He's actually, you know, sold a business, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars range. And he actually now has an online product that he's got. It's an app. And he has now, you know, figured out some aspects of the sales of his app to make it sell better. And again, he's going on this really incredible global thing with an app where, you know, selling an app for just a couple of dollars, but selling it, you know, to such huge volumes of people. And I've watched him do this process over the last couple of years, you know, from kind of just playing around with the idea to doing some beta testing and then fiddling around with the pricing model to figure out, you know, what would make people actually buy it. And it's been really interesting because he was noticing that he could have the same price, but the way he marketed the price and the way he described the price would have profoundly different, you know, impacts on people's buying behavior. And I know we've all read about that kind of stuff in journals, but to actually watch it happen and to watch him grapple with it and now to actually see him winning at it is inspiring for me.
Wow, that's that is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Chloe, what do we have to look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
Well, I actually do have a couple of free webinars that I'm doing for profitable practices. So there's a couple of organizations that I'm partnering with that are hosting some free webinars, and I will be hosting a couple of free webinars, through my site as well. So I'd love it if anyone who's listening and just wants to learn more about how they can have a more profitable practice, I'd love if they would like to join.
So how can they get access to that? And also, if somebody wants to go deeper with what you shared today, how can they learn more?
Well, what they could do is they could go to profitablepractices.net and just simply sign up, for my free newsletter and mailings and all that kind of stuff. If they go to profitablepractices.net, they'll definitely get notified about these, free webinars and things like that I mentioned. And then what they could also do, if they wanted to go a little bit deeper and actually watch some of these modules, they could use the code SMASH, as in smashing the plateau. They could use the promo code SMASH to get 25% off of the videos for profitable practices.
It sounds great. Well, thank you for sharing that with our audience. And Chloe, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and sharing your insights. My guest today has been Dr. Chloe Carmichael, the founder of DrChloe.com and ProfitablePractices.net. Thank you again, Chloe, for joining us.
Thanks, David.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at SmashingThePlateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed the stages you can use to grow and build a practice, growing revenue with clients you serve directly, building a team, and training others to follow your business techniques. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's David@SmashingThePlateau.com. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.